The NE File, the ultimate Patriot podcast with Nate Lundy.
Talking Patriots, let's do it with Matt LePan, NFLSpinZone.com. He is on Twitter at Matt_LePan. That's LAPAN. Matt, obviously the big question when it comes to the Patriots is the expectations on Garoppolo for the first 4 weeks. As based on what you've seen during the preseason, training camp, and even prior to that, how do you feel confidence-wise about him leading the team for those first 4 weeks?
Well, it's been up and down for Garoppolo. You know, he had a slow start in every game he played in, and then he had some ups, like in the end of the Saints game, some big ups like he did in the Chicago Bears preseason game, and then a big down to finish off his preseason against the Carolina Panthers. I think that he's shown some improvements as a quarterback, but I don't think that anyone should get their expectations out of whack. He's not going to be Tom Brady. But same thing going the other way. He's not going to be Rohan Davey. He's not going to be Matt Gutierrez. He's going to be a winning quarterback, I think. I'm looking at 2-2 more than likely, so maybe not a winning quarterback, but 3-1 is a definite possibility for him. He's got a strong arm. He seems to have developed a good rapport with a couple of his receivers, especially Martellus Bennett and Chris Hogan and even Malcolm Mitchell. In the limited time that he was on the field in the preseason, these guys all look like they have a little something with them. And then you add in Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, Rob Gronkowski. I think this team is too good to not go .500, even under Jimmy Garoppolo. But the big question is Jimmy Garoppolo mentally ready? That's been the question around here. You know, there's a lot of speculation after the Carolina game that, you know, maybe Tom Brady looking over his shoulder rattled him a little bit. Brady not there. His suspension is officially started, and nobody knows what he's up to. Julian Edelman said it's like Buddy being in jail. But what there is, and it's been the talk of New England the past couple of days, is a big Tom Brady banner hanging off the lighthouse at Gillette Stadium. And some are speculating that it's going to rattle Garoppolo. If that's the case, then he was never ready for the prime time. But like I said, I think 2-2 is probably most realistic. 3-1, not out of the question, though.
Matt, when you talk about the mental side of it for it, you know, here would be my question, because I've got to think that this is a natural feeling for him to have, and that is, you know, you look at what happened with Brock Osweiler last season and then in the offseason. You know, he winds up with 7 starts. He was, you know, mostly, you know, mediocre at best, and yet he winds up with a 4-year deal worth $72 million and half of it's guaranteed down in Houston. So I've got to think that, you know, regardless of the win-loss record, the big thing I would think going through Garoppolo's ears, between the years right now, I should say, is what he can do to get himself one of those paydays.
What's really interesting dynamic for Garoppolo, because he kind of has the inside track on if and when he could become the next Patriots quarterback. He shares the same agent as Tom Brady and Don Yee. So it's a really interesting dynamic. It's not something you usually think of or usually see. I think that if he goes out and he performs well, the Patriots have a lot of leverage when you get to the NFL draft in the postseason. You know, he may not have to win all these games, but if he comes out, he looks like a pro quarterback. He shows that quick release that he has. He shows good footwork, and he shows the ability to be a legitimate NFL quarterback. The talent pool is so shallow right now. If you look at what's happening in Dallas, Tony Romo, with a broken back, is being carried on the 53-man roster because the Cowboys don't believe there's anyone else out there worth pulling onto the roster. So Garoppolo, if he plays well and he shows good mental aptitude and a good physical game, could really get the Patriots some good draft capital, and he could become a starting quarterback in the league as soon as next year. I think it's realistic, but what I don't think is realistic that some people have said is Garoppolo getting traded in season. I think there's no way that will ever happen. I don't think Bill Belichick would give up his leverage like that, because if you give up Garoppolo and he's playing as good as you thought he was playing, that you can get a 1 from a team, you know, for example, that team's going to instantly be better, and your draft pick that you got from them is going to instantly be devalued. So I wouldn't look for him to be traded until after the season, and that's only if he wants to go and there's the right team.
when you look at a quarterback like Garoppolo, you talked about the different weapons he's got with Edelman, with Gronk, with Martellus Bennett, and all of those. But you know, one of the things that can wind up helping out a quarterback like that or in this kind of position is a running game. But I know there's some question marks with the Patriots as to who we think is going to emerge or whether it's going to truly be a running back by committee. Matt, talk to me about, you know, how that backfield looks for the Patriots getting ready for week one.
It appears to be running back by committee. You look at LeGarrette Blount, he's going to be, you know, the closest thing to a lead back. But what shows that the Patriots are committed to a running game at the beginning of this season is the way they constructed their roster. They kept four tight ends. They kept A.J. Derby, a second-year player who's a converted quarterback and a pass catcher, as a tight end. They also kept Clay Harbor, who they brought in as a free agent in the offseason. And he's a blocker. He's primarily going to be a blocking back. They also kept a fullback in James Devlin. And the Patriots coaching staff extremely complimentary of Devlin and what they're able to do with him. LeGarrette Blount's been complimentary of him. James White has been complimentary of him. And I think White's kind of your secondary back. He's more of a pass-catching back. You know, at this point, Patriots fans have probably seen enough of him trying to run the ball in really just 2 years. And then the big question is if and when Dion Lewis can come back. He had another surgery on that surgically repaired knee towards ACL last season. They said it's just a cleanup, but an 8 to 10 week time frame. It's a tough time for him to come back from, especially when you're looking at a running back who his game is predicated on jump cuts, quick cuts, spin moves, agility. I'm not sure he's going to be able to come back this year and be effective. If he does, he instantly becomes your lead back. He showed he can carry the ball a little bit. He also showed that obviously he's a great pass catching back. But the Patriots, you know, they're built to get off tackle, but not much other than that. You look up the middle of their offensive line, David Andrews, the center, really more of a pass blocker. Jonathan Cooper, we're not really sure what he is, but he was always touted as a good run blocker, but hasn't really necessarily shown that in the NFL. Joe Tooney's been a pleasant surprise up front for the Patriots after drafting him this year. But if you really look at it, he's probably a better pass blocker at this point. You know, you're set up to go off the edges with a good run-blocking tackle in Marcus Cannon, same with Nate Solder on the other side. Gronkowski, Bennett, and Harbaugh are all very, very good blockers at the tight end position. And then you add in Devlin. I don't think it's going to be a true running game, but it really has been a true running game in New England in years. It's been the quarterback show. It's been a passing game, especially under Josh McDaniels.
As you get ready for this opening game against Arizona, with the exception of the quarterback position, or anything that we've chatted about, Matt, is there anything in particular you're going to be looking for out of this team in the first game?
I want to see what Jamie Collins and Dante Hightower look like. Both players are due for big contracts at the end of the year. I think Jamie Collins has been outstanding this preseason. He has gained back all the weight he lost from that mystery illness last season, but he kept all of his speed. He may have even become more explosive and looks like he's poised to become an all-pro and just take the league by storm. I personally qualify him as an elite linebacker. Some might not. They say he misses too much time, doesn't make enough plays. I think he's an elite linebacker, and I think he's going to show it this year. And then Dante Hightower today was named team captain. He's a consistent, steady linebacker, but in the preseason they've shown him being used a little bit as an edge defender, almost in a 3-4 look, where he comes off the line standing up. And he has looked outstanding. He is strong, he is healthy, and both of these linebackers are really going to be needed to kind of slow down David Johnson. If you can do that, then you allow some more coverage in the backfield. A guy like Eric Rowe, who the Patriots went out and traded for today, could come in and defend this passing attack that the Cardinals have, you know, with Fitzgerald and Floyd and Brown. They're a pretty good passing team. They have if they can get the coverage on the back, it allows you to do more things covering these receivers.
Last one for you, Matt, and it's always the fun question that you can ask. You're going into week one. You're putting together your fantasy football lineup. Would you use Jimmy Garoppolo in week one, or is it too tough of a matchup for his first game and going up against Arizona's defense?
Oh, this is a tough one. I'm going to go with stay away from Jimmy Garoppolo week one. Week two, three, and four, I think he's actually a pretty good start. Week one, it's just I think this game would be tough with Tom Brady at quarterback, and I don't think he would put up big stats. The Arizona defense is loaded, and a guy who's really going to probably try to get after it is going to be Chandler Jones. You might see some extra oomph coming off the edge there from a guy like Jones, and then you obviously have Calais Campbell, Marcus Golden, and then you have the defensive backs like Patrick Peterson and Tyrann Mathieu. It's just such a loaded defense, and it's really tough for a guy making his first career start on the road in prime time to say, yeah, he'll be a good fantasy start. I think he's a good guy, again, for the next couple of weeks, he'll stem the tide. If you could pick up him and Tom Brady, that would be perfect for you, because then after 4 weeks, you drop Garoppolo and you have Brady the rest of the way.
Matt LePan with us. Matt, you know, we always want our teams to start off the year with a win, but let's face it, we also want to start off our fantasy team with a win 1-0. So I had to be able to ask you that question. Matt LePan with us.
Oh, absolutely. If I lose week one, it's terrible. It ruins the rest of the year.
Well, and then you get all tempted into bad trades and all that kind of stuff. It just goes downhill from there. Matt LePan with us on Twitter, at Matt_LePan, LAPAN, covering the Patriots for NFLSpinZone.com. Matt, really appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Look forward to a great season.
Coming up next, it's the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am and I am, and I'm not, from the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in the first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than one-to-one touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott could be a huge plus for them, but that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. He goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to fit. Yet, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement obviously Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at that Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team, but that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So, I mean, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like a Mike Blark. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk. Okay. But he's not bad. This David Johnson's pretty good. They want to run the ball well. And if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. They're going to play great defense. You know, typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship-caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bills team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do. More so than any team in the league, they morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you. And we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second wind during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere it's, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second wind kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've played the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience. And to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience, one team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And also, maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady, Eddie. Keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five. Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes a national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just to, for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.